Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And for today's pod, I'm chatting to Cody Amos. Cody has around a decade of experience in film visual effects, working at places such as Industrial Light and Magic, ILM, and Wet Digital. He's now creative director at Heckler HQ in Singapore. Welcome, Cody.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the podcast, live from Singapore or something. We were talking just before we started this about Weta Digital, it being named after a bug or something. Is that right?
Yes, correct. It's named after a very old, a prehistoric looking bug in New Zealand. It's kind of like a creepy looking cricket.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we'll get into that. Bugs or crickets or monsters, whatever. I wanted to start off talking about our theme at the magazine this month in August is fit for purpose, which maybe we can sort of weave slightly into conversations, and with your role I think it's probably quite suited. So firstly, I wanted to ask you, what do Heckler HQ do as a business, and what's your role there?
Our main thing is post-production, so we do a lot of classic visual effects, and we also do just actually all of post-production. So we'll do edit, grade, general online, which is just kind of what we call compositing and like finishing projects. Mostly for commercials though, nowadays, so we're mostly in the commercial space, but we do sort of some interesting odd other things like augmented reality experiences and some virtual production stuff as well. And I'm the creative director there now. So my job is kind of, actually, to be honest, I have quite a few hats because in my current role, it's a fairly small company as well. So we're only like 25 people in Singapore. We have a similar size studio in Sydney as well. And because it's that sort of smaller scale, I get to kind of wear a lot more hats, which is really fun. So I overall kind of visual effects supervise. So I supervise all of the artists. I also supervise on set sometimes when we go help out on shoots. And I also actually direct a little bit as well. So sometimes I put on the actual director hat and direct the whole commercial or experience or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds a lot. I was actually going to ask you whether in your role, like how much of a sort of a hands-on kind of, you know, were you more of an overseer or a doer? And it sounds like you're both potentially.
Yeah, I definitely am both. And I think because I, you know, have worked in visual effects for a long time, I can still, you know, jump on the tools and do things myself. I'm sort of increasingly trying not to too much, but it is always nice to have that as a backup, you know, if things aren't going super well, to be able to jump on the tools and help out. And also there's certain projects where I just kind of go, oh, I really want to do this one. This one looks a bit fun. Can I do this one? Which tends to make my life harder because then I'm like, oh, I've only got half a day to do, you know, a day's work.
I was going to say, like, is it a challenge though? Like, you know, you're essentially a leader, right? So you got people under you doing various things. You're overseeing them all. And if you're jumping in, is there a danger with that? Like, whether you want to do it or not, like if things aren't going well or you're just excited about a project, does it ever feel like you're sort of taking over from the team a little bit? You know, like they sort of feel like you don't have the confidence in them. I don't know if that's a challenge in that environment, or does it always feel quite collaborative? Like everybody's working towards the same goal?
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. And I think it is something I'm always mindful of, because you do have to be very mindful of that, whether it's going to be you or if you do have to kind of get other people involved to help out. I think the industry of visual effects in general, and sort of maybe it's like creative industries in general, you're kind of being asked to deliver something cool kind of out of nothing a little bit, you know, like someone has to create the imagery. And then, it's sort of an artistic endeavor, but at the same time, it's like, it's a production thing and it's a business thing. And you've got clients who want like results in certain amounts of time. And in TVCs, especially, a little bit more than film, although film can have the same issue where if you're running out of time and you're running into problems or people aren't happy, you know, someone can just not be being able to nail it. And that might be just because they're just not good at this type of thing, where you put the wrong people on this exact thing. It can be really tricky. And so sometimes you, as like in the management role, or the supervisor role, you do kind of have to switch switch horses a little bit. But that is really, you know, I am very conscious of that because it, you know, can feel like, you know, someone's failed, you know, if you have to get someone else involved. So it is a bit tricky, but generally it's okay. I think if it's all done in a nice way and everyone's like, you know, there's no need to be a dick about anything. So if it's all kind of done nicely, I think it's usually fine. And it doesn't have to be done too often either.
No, it makes sense. I was suddenly got thinking as you were talking about the TV show The Bear. I don't know, have you seen that show yet? It's about sort of a chef in a kitchen.
Oh, no.
It's really, really good. Obviously, high-pressured environment, and especially if you go up like high-end cooking, I guess it becomes very creative. And at one point, like they get inundated with orders, and the main character the head chef, just starts shouting at everybody, and pushes his second in command out the way to just take over.
Right.
probably not a good model to watch for, you know, your career or anything or leadership, but it's fun to watch as a show in terms of sort of creative process and working in a tight-knit team. It's very much a found family show. Anyway, I'm going off topic as ever.
It sounds like that. Yeah, that can happen. But I guess in VFX it's like that, but in slow motion, because it's not like, you know, in cooking you're like having to do it within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
For us, you know, it can be high pressure, can be days or weeks.
Was like creative director, is that the kind of typical path that you would take in your industry, or is that sort of bit offbeat?
Yeah, it's not super typical. I mean, especially since, so I spent years in the actual film world. So I was in like film VFX for about 10 years. And then I kind of wandered over into advertising, kind of just to have a look and see what that was like. I think my general career, I kind of bumble around and I've kind of just been wandering about, like wondering what to do a little bit. I think if things start feeling too easy for me, I start looking for new challenges. And the advertising thing started out as almost just a curiosity. I was like, well, I've done quite a lot of films now. I wonder what ads are like. Is that any fun? And then over in advertising, though, I realized that there was kind of room for that kind of role. And so especially where I am in particular, at Heckler, I found like a good kind of interesting little tight-knit team. And there was kind of space to like move into that role, which I found really exciting. And then it's been super challenging in all sorts of different new ways, you know, like all these leadership things we've already touched on a little bit, and more of like a creative overseeing role as well, rather than kind of being, you know, contributing a lot but to a very small amount of a film. You know, if you're in VFX, you kind of do like a lot on like a few shots, whereas now it's a bit more like holistic, which I'm really enjoying that kind of transition.
Did you always want to work in visual effects? You talked about sort of stumbling into things and stumbling around a bit. Was that kind of always the thing you wanted to do, or did it just sort of one thing accidentally lead to another?
A little bit yes and no. Like I got into film pretty young. Like I was a teenager when I started really getting into movies, and I was like making crappy little movies with my friends at high school, which was really fun. Lots of just silly things. And then at the same time, and then so I kind of was like at that point thinking, man, I want to be a director. I want to be a famous director. That would be cool. But I also had no real idea of how to go about that, other than kind of just making crappy movies. But at the same time, I was getting into kind of getting exposed to that idea of visual effects. And I was watching a lot of like, you know, the making of scenes, like in like, I don't know, the Lord of the Rings DVD or something. You know, I watched those things like a lot. And I was like, wow, these people just spend all day making like movie magic. And that's their whole job. That seems cool. If I have to get a real job, can I get that real job?
I heard that actually. I can't remember. Maybe it was on that, or it was at the end of something, or an interview or something, perhaps with Peter Jackson or somebody, or maybe it was with Viggo Mortensen. And it was something about like how a whole generation of New Zealand filmmakers kind of sprung up from Lord of the Rings. They kind of all grew up making movies on that movie. I think a few of the actors and other people involved in it said something like, it's one of the most valuable things instead of almost film school is just watching the making of Lord of the Rings DVDs, like all the behind the scenes stuff, because it's invaluable.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, there was so much content on those DVDs. It was super fascinating. And I do think as a New Zealander, we never had like a big film industry. I mean, we still don't have exactly a giant one, but when Lord of the Rings came out, and it was like one of those giant blockbusters, like, you know, global things. And it was one of the, when I was a kid, I mean, I can't remember how old I was. I feel like I was only like 13 or something when the first one came out. And I was like so blown away by it. And it was just seemed like one of the coolest blockbusters ever. And then the idea that it was made in New Zealand was very, I think, important for us, because we were like, wait, how do they do that? They can do that here. It doesn't have to be over in Hollywood. And so that was quite inspiring. And then, yeah, it just sort of, I guess it's that same thing, right? You just realize that maybe it's possible if someone's done it near you. But I think it's kind of probably a pretty important thing for kids in general, right? To be exposed to stuff and being made to think, oh, maybe I could do that.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think as well, the environment like lends itself to, well, quite a lot of fantasy and just sort of epic landscapes in terms of storytelling. You know, I've driven around the whole South Island of New Zealand, and it's just insane. Just every direction you look in is just mountain, lake, it's forest, yeah. Just like every bit of scenery you can imagine. It blew me away. It was amazing.
Definitely good for Middle Earth.
Yes. Well, you know, I heard there's rumblings, there's talks that, you know, Warner Brothers, Peter Jackson, you know, he might come back, he might do some more Lord of the Rings stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows it will be? But, you know, it's fingers crossed, you know, I think that something interesting could come out of that. I want to sort of go back a little bit to your career, really, and sort of how your approach to sort of storytelling has changed over the years. I mean, in terms of VFX, like, how much kind of creative direction do you have over a particular brief or a particular scene? You know, do you get to put your stamp on it quite heavily, or you know, and I guess as well as similarly in advertising, you know, do they come with a very specific brief, or do you get to sort of play around quite a lot? Has that changed over the years, I suppose?
Yeah, right. It varies a lot. I think in the film world, definitely a little bit less, although it depends a little bit. Like, I did work on Spider-Man Far From Home, and there was like a few like elemental creatures in that. There's like the Molten Man and the Cyclone Man, and they were actually really fun for me because they were very effects-y, and so I was in like the effects department, so my main thing was simulation stuff. And these were kind of characters that were kind of made out of simulations, so I got to really, and I kind of helped a lot with Molten Man, and then and kind of did most of the Cyclone Man. And so I kind of really got to drive what they looked like, which was very fun. Obviously not entirely. There was still like a lot of us involved, although us as a studio really did design exactly what they looked like. It wasn't like that was sort of mandated by the director. So that was really fun. I think a lot of the time though, it is a little more mandated by either the director or like other kind of designers, especially in the film world. So then, to be honest, I was getting a little bit tired of feature films and kind of not having a ton of creative input, like, and in the role that I was in. I think if you got to the very top, in the very top VFX supervisor roles, there's a fair bit of creative input you get. But yeah, so then I'm sort of wanted to explore the whole advertising side, and then now I get kind of it's more of a range again. So sometimes I'll get an agency that'll come to us, and they kind of do have a fairly good idea of what they want. But also often I get, you know, we get agencies or clients coming to us and going like with a very, very open briefs, which is really fun. And so like then I get to jump in and really explore. And then certainly in that director role. So that varies as well. I know my role varies a lot, so it's probably kind of confusing. But sometimes I get asked to like literally direct something and do kind of some VFX stuff. And then I get to really jump in and like, yeah, I get to kind of craft the whole thing, and down to like even what are the shots and what are the camera angles and what's the pacing and like everything about the storytelling. So yeah, nowadays I get kind of a lot of input on that, and which is why I'm really enjoying that, even though the projects are obviously much smaller than like, I don't know, Star Wars or like Marvel films. But yeah.
That makes sense. And I guess it sounds nice maybe to have a bit of both. You know, sometimes you get to get really stuck in, and other times you can just sort of deliver on whatever the brief is. Yeah. You know, sort of keeps it varied. I wanted to ask what your take is on the industry at the moment, because we've obviously got all this, the SAG-AFTRA strikes in Hollywood. And kind of tied into that, I didn't realize, but obviously actors and writers have unions, but VFX artists don't. And I wondered just what your thoughts on that were, having been in the industry for so long.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting question and an interesting time. I think to be honest, through my sort of life that I can remember, I feel like I relate strikes to usually more like government-run industries. Like I feel like in New Zealand anyway, there's, you know, there was teacher strikes and there's like the nurses and doctors and stuff would go on strike sometimes. But those are kind of like, you know, they're kind of petitioning the government to change wages and things. And then you occasionally hear about some, I don't know, maybe like the docks or something or like some kind of transport. But again, it's usually like governments are involved. So for me, this is actually the first time I've seen like a really big, you know, like this in the creative world, in the film world, like really big scale strike. Maybe I'm forgetting, maybe this has happened before. But so, yeah, I mean, I've been finding it quite interesting watching it. And then, yeah, it is the whole question of visual effects artists having a union has been a conversation for my whole career. So artists have definitely been talking about it the whole time because they get treated differently depending on the country as well. So like some countries do provide a little bit more kind of worker protection for visual effects artists. In some countries, it's very low, and it's very normal as well in the industry for companies to kind of somehow be outside of the normal employee protection systems as well, as in like somehow we just usually get excluded. It's like no, it's fine, it's just visual effects, you can do whatever you want. And so then there has been this question of like, well, should we unionize and how do you unionize? And I feel like that's constantly been going. And then of course that's been a renewed conversation right now because obviously there are the strikes with the actors and writers and everyone, but also that is now directly affecting the visual effects industry because all the projects are on hold. And because the visual effects artists, you know, traditionally not protected very well at all, like they traditionally are just on contracts with the companies and have really no employer rights, employee rights. You know, there's definitely, you know, a lot of the industry is a little bit nervous, or maybe very nervous, because no one knows how long that's going to go for. And if it goes for a certain amount of time, there'll definitely be a lot of layoffs. Of course, in the visual effects world, it'll kick back off again in a minute, and then they'll need everyone back, and it'll be kind of the companies will be in trouble the other way around again all of a sudden, which is usually what happens when COVID hit. There's like lots of layoffs, and then suddenly everything's back on a couple of months later and everyone's scrambling to hire everyone back. But yeah, why we don't have a visual effects, why we don't have a union as well is an interesting question, which I don't fully know why. One theory maybe, or one thought I had, was that like, you know, the writers and actors and everyone, they set up their guilds like way back in the day. And that was kind of back when unions were way more of a thing. You know, if you look early 1900s, everyone kind of has proper unions, and there's strength in those things. Visual effects is pretty new, and I think the whole like union thing had lost a lot of power through the 70s and 80s, from what I understand. And so by the time you get actual VFX, maybe there's just not much of an interest in it anymore.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe these things are cyclical, and like I think with the rise of streaming, like, it's kind of crazy to think about it because, like, obviously Netflix has been around a long time, but actually a lot of the other streaming platforms haven't. And suddenly, you know, you say 5 years ago, there wasn't really that. There was Netflix, so there weren't that many others. Smaller, more niche kind of ones. But now there's, you know, a lot of big players and everyone's walling off their content and kind of all fighting for subscribers and demanding more from writers, from actors, but also from visual effects people, especially with, you know, a lot of these TV shows like that have, you know, massive action shots and, I don't know, sci-fi and all sorts of other stuff. But everyone forgets that loads of visual effects stuff is the work you don't see on what is seemingly a normal drama or something as well. So I guess there's a truism there when it comes to, you know, economically tough times, and, you know, creatives are always asked to do more with less. I just wondered, as a kind of an overall feel in the industry, you know, you finding that, obviously you've moved more into sort of the advertising world, so perhaps it's a bit different, but I just wondered how you sort of seeing things on both sides of that fence.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been the trajectory for my whole career, actually. Is a constant kind of trajectory of, can we get more, but preferably with a little bit faster, and I imagine with less money, like as in like the budgets. That's definitely been happening for the whole time, and then streaming is pushing that forward even more. But all those things are in visual effects anyway. In particular, it is partly driven by the technology as well. So like our technology and like our ability has been going up and up and up. And we've been getting a lot of like, you know, the software is so much better. The hardware is so much better. Even in, you know, computing is an interesting thing because, you know, I haven't been working for like that long, but 15 years ago, the computers I was using were like so different, you know, like it's like really, really different. Like what we could achieve was just completely, yeah, just on a whole different level, like a much lower level. So as everything gets easier and like faster, but all the requirements, so the requests are just going up with that. So it's like, oh, wow, I can have more VFX. So let's use more VFX. So that's why it's just a massive increase. And then with streaming, like, you know, you just got tons more content. Like the content level is just going up. And so then, and you know, we're talking like longer things as well, right? Like instead of doing like one film for an hour and a half, it's like, how about we do an 8-hour series? And sometimes let's pack them full of like, you know, film quality VFX, but definitely with lower budgets than the film quality, like, compared to the time. But that's definitely been going on. And then in advertising, it's absolutely like still like absolutely happening as well. Like everyone wants, more faster, but in some ways it's because they can have it. Like you just,
well, I did have one of those questions that was, is the phrase, you know, let's fix it in post. Is that kind of a sort of trigger phrase for you? Sort of, you know, everyone thinking that they can just achieve everything after it's filmed kind of thing, just visual effects or sort that out. Like, is that just becoming more and more of a problem, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is like a joke phrase we part, like, you know, throw around there. And if you're on set as well, like it's a funny the praise where obviously people like to say that and then look to the VFX soup guy and go, huh? You're going to fix it, right? And I mean, I guess the reality is nowadays that you can do anything in post, but it comes with time and money though. So, you know, it is a bit silly. And sometimes it is a bit silly. Like some people will be like, oh, I would just do that in post. And you're like, why can't you just do it on set? Just move the box. If you don't want the box in the shot, let's just move it. How hard can that be?
Yeah, I think perhaps sometimes, technology can limit people because they just think it frees them up, but actually just can make them a little bit lazy occasionally. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that there is a... I think creatively sometimes it's silly, as in if you lean super, super heavily on post when it's not really designed for that, your project can just look a little bit like an animated thing. When if you like a really, really well done film usually has like the right balance. There's the real production used in the right place. There's the CG used in the right place. There's the matte painting used in the right place. It's like all kind of like cleverly thought through. And if you use everything in its most, you know, like the best use for everything, you can get a really, really nice result.
Well, actually, it leads me on nicely because I was going to ask you if there's any work that you've seen recently that you thought, oh, I wish I'd been involved in that in some way. And my example, obviously, I don't work in visual effects, but I was listening to a podcast with the head of visual effects that worked on The Last of Us, I believe. And he was talking about his approach there, and it was a sort of less is more thing where obviously it's a kind of a post-apocalyptic world, and he didn't want to. Every shot didn't need to be crammed full of, I don't know, overgrowing plants and collapsed buildings and things like that. So he said it was more about kind of picking the moments and the things that they wanted to draw your attention to, you know, whether it's a wide shot or a close-up or whatever it might be. It sounded like a sort of quite kind of a measured and sort of sensible approach. And I just remember when I was watching that thinking, oh, they've done the world really nicely here. And this was before I listened to him talk about it. It kind of came across, at least to me, so I appreciated it.
Yeah, I mean, that does sound like someone who's, you know, thinking very cleverly about like, yeah, what to use when, like when do you use which tricks, kind of, because you don't need to use like everything all the time, you know, like if you're building up a world, you don't have to, I guess storytelling, right? When you're telling a story, you know, one shot tells one piece of information or one piece of the story, and then you go to the next shot. And you don't have to be trying to tell, like, look at my whole world with every single shot. You know, like some shots might just be about this person's face and what they're feeling. And we don't need to be talking about how, remember, there's an apocalypse.
Yeah, that's true. Are there any any sort of, I don't know, movies or TV or anything you've seen recently or appetizing where you think, oh man, how did they do that? Or like, that's really impressive. And I don't know, just sort of caught your attention.
Yeah. Oh man, the one that just came to mind is a little bit old now though. But June I thought was really beautiful. That was like last year, wasn't it? That's, was it older? That was one of the last times where I was like, wow, that looked good. Like, you know, just as a big visual effects movie. But again, I mean, that was actually a great example of one that just didn't feel like a visual effects-y movie. It just didn't feel like a poppy, clean world full of kind of creatures that are not that believable. I mean, which is all fine and fun as well. I mean, Spider-Man or something is very fun. But Dune just felt like there was this gritty realness. Like you sort of felt like you had gone to space and you've gone to these other strange planets. But it was packed full of VFX and amazing, like, you know, sand simulations and amazing designs of, you know, spaceships and like everything, very like full on sci-fi, but somehow felt real. I was very, yeah, that was one of the few times since leaving VFX or since leaving the film industry where I was like, man, that would have been pretty cool to be involved with.
Yeah, I think so. That would be definitely a good one on your CV or resume or whatever. Yeah, it did look nice. And I think I remember reading actually that the budget for that is not as high as you think it would be. You think it would be, you know, through the roof. But I don't know, perhaps they just were very mindful about the things they were spending money on, potentially. One of the ones I really like, actually, this is, if you want an old example, is I rewatched it about a year or two ago, was John Carter of Mars. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, right.
Taylor Kitsch. It's pretty old now, but actually, if you go back, I think the visual effects held up really well. And, you know, obviously it's lots of walking, talking aliens, etc. But yeah, I don't know. You go back and watch it and you're like, actually, these effects are good. Like, I think that, you know, I can undo a movie, something like that, which is perhaps considered a kind of a cheesy sci-fi in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to go back and check it out.
Just see some clips or something, see if you agree or if you're like, yeah, he has no idea what he's talking about. But I liked it from the effects point of view. I know we're sort of slightly running out of time now, actually, but I just wanted to kind of ask on the sort of work you've been impressed by or work you've worked on that you've been impressed by, your own work. proud, maybe, okay, is a word. I don't know, but sort of any work that you've done with brands where you think, I really love how that particular project turned out.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently been entering one thing in to some awards, which was a project for WorkSafe in Victoria, which we actually did a little while ago now, but it's sort of just on the award circuit right now. But it was quite cool. It was about like gendered violence. It was actually a pretty sort of serious topic, but we approached it by kind of making this like shape-shifting monster thing, which represented like gendered violence shifting into different forms. So it was like trying to just express that, like, there's all these different ways that this sort of, I don't know, like this insidious thing can take different shapes, and obviously from sometimes not so overtly terrible to quite overtly terrible forms, but that it's all kind of feeding the same monster. And we kind of built this whole monster thing out of, like, it was like a particle simulation thing. So a little bit similar to some of the stuff I've done for, you know, like Spider-Man or something, but this time I got to direct it and I got to come up with the whole design and actually direct the whole piece. So I was quite proud of that. And that was one of the first things I got to direct as well in the advertising world. But yeah, that one was pretty cool. So it's like WorkSafe, what's it called? WorkSafe Victoria. I think it's called, it comes in many forms.
Can we see that anywhere? Like, is that online? Is it?
Yeah, I can send you a link.
Okay, cool. We'll put it in the show notes as well, so people can have a look at that. Okay, that sounds really cool. I guess we're pretty much out of time, but I just wanted to ask you what sort of excites you about the year ahead. You know, is there anything you're working on, or any kind of direction you'd like the business to go in, or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a pretty exciting year so far. Like, the beginning of the year, I actually came on as a partner at Heckler, so I've kind of like, speaking of all my different hats, like, I'm now wearing like the partner director hat a little bit as well. So definitely excited about just, again, like sort of learning more about actually moving a bit more into like the entrepreneurial kind of businessy side of things, but also just, yeah, excited in general to try to get some good work going and I've been enjoying just like the whole running a studio kind of facet of life lately. So trying to build up the team, and things are starting to feel pretty good.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, very final question. You talked about sort of studios. I just wondered, do you get a vibe of like the sort of creative industries in Singapore? Like, I don't know, is it quite a creative city in that regard? Like, I always considered it maybe more financial, a bit like Hong Kong, but I don't know. What's your take?
To be honest, that is totally right. It is a bit more, or a lot more financial. We're one of the few, but there is a creative industry here, and it is actually growing a bit as well. And so that's one cool thing about running a company, is that we can, you know, hire like the cool young designers who are kind of fresh out of school and actually give them somewhere to grow and develop their skills. Because I think previously there wasn't a lot of options for them here. They kind of had to head off overseas if they're going to make it in this kind of industry. But no, I think the creative industries are kind of expanding, and the whole region, I think it's heading in the right direction. But no, it's not quite as creative as like London or something.
No, yeah, I understand. I guess I was just thinking about like, because you can obviously tap into loads of different areas in that part of the world. And I was thinking about, I know it's not entirely related, but just how much in the last sort of 5 years or so Netflix invested in coming up with, movies and TV shows coming out of Korea, and then the rise of like K-pop and stuff like that. And just, that's sort of exploding in a crazy way in the last 10 years.
Exploring their culture. That's amazing.
Yeah. Do you do much working with Korean clients at all? Or is that sort of on the horizon?
We haven't done much, but we actually have been kind of looking into it a little bit. So yeah, that's another thing. Like, yeah, we'd love to kind of expand it to Korea and Japan. I mean, Korea and Japan is like, there's a lot of cool stuff happening there. Those are very vibrant, creative places, right? I think for Asia, those are probably like the leaders.
Yeah, our editor at large, Natasha, who I think put us in touch originally. I think she wrote a piece once about the Japanese Gen Z, the Satori generation, I think it's called, and it just sounds fascinating. The sort of things going on in terms of, you know, cultural pockets kind of arising and creative industries, etc.
Yeah, right.
So yeah. Anyway, I said I was going to wrap up, so we should wrap up. this always happens. Anyway, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the Media Cat Magazine podcast.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, that was awesome.